Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tell the Others with me, Heidi Rogers. And today I am joined by the lovely Janine Halloran. Did I say your last name right?
Yes, you did. It was perfect.
Oh, good. Janine is one of my sort of Instagram friends of friends from Instagram, but now in real life. We are going to be talking today about coping skills and all sorts of other things because that's Janine's specialty. But I will let you tell us a bit more about your background. And thank you so much for being here, first of all.
Well, thank you for having me. Even with like the time zone difference, we were able to make it work. So that's pretty amazing.
Finally, we got there. Yeah. So tell us about yourself. What's your jam? What's your background? How'd you get into all this stuff?
Yep. So I am by trade. I'm a therapist. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, and I live in Massachusetts with my family. And I've been working with kids, teens, and their families for about 20 years. So I still actually see kids for individual therapy. I say it's like a small but mighty practice. I only see a few kids, but I really focus in trying to make sure that I can support them. But the majority of my time is spent running a couple of businesses I started several years ago. So I first started Encourage Play, which is all about teaching kids social skills through play. I really loved doing that. I had some experience working in groups with kids on the spectrum, kids with ADHD. They were really struggling with social skills. And we taught them social interaction in group. And it was really fun. It was challenging. It was hard. Groups, I think, are the hardest thing to do as a therapist. But I loved that. So I started Encourage Play. And, you know, part of social skills is self-regulation. So I wrote this post about coping skills and it just took off like gangbusters. And so I decided, you know, after talking with my husband, he's like, I think maybe you should like maybe create something different, like a site that's really focused on coping skills, because that's done really well. And that's what I did. So I created Coping Skills for Kids. I think that was back, oh gosh, was that 2014, 2015? And then I wrote the Coping Skills for Kids workbook. It was republished by PESU Publishing in Media in 2017. And it's just, you know, organically grown. You know, people will say, oh, do you have these? I would love visuals. Do you have visuals? And I'd be like, okay. And so I'll make visuals. Oh, I thought these were like physical card decks, not like digital downloads. Can you make physical ones? Okay. Like it just sort of grew from there. And I like, yeah. I wrote and I made things from the perspective of a school counselor, a therapist who's working with kids. I wanted to make sure that I got things that were easy to use and very practical and something you could pick up and use right away. So I wrote the book that I always wanted, but I couldn't find.
That's awesome. That's what a lot of people say, that they wrote the book that they couldn't find, that they wrote the book or the manual that didn't exist. So, oh, that's cool. And we were chatting before about your kids. So that's, I think, another piece of it, of like, it's cool when us as therapists have our clinical practice and our, you know, professional experience. But then there's also another piece, I think, of being a parent, that then it's like the stuff that we might read or learn in school, you then actually get to implement and go, you know what, that is a stupid strategy and it does not work in real life. Like, yeah. So how old are your kids, and what has that sort of the blurring, I guess, of being a therapist and being a mom, you know, what's that been like for you?
Oh my goodness. So my kids are now 11 and 13. I can't believe I'm saying this, but they are both in middle school. So that's always sort of, it's challenging. It's fun. It's interesting. I enjoy the drama, as does my daughter. So she really like brings the drama. She'll be like, I have more stories today. Guess what? This happened in this class. You won't believe what they were doing. Like they're doing TikTok dances in like silent reading. I don't even understand what's happening right now. The things that she'll come up and say, right? So the thing that was really interesting, you know, like I'd worked with families before I had kids and I have continued to work with families after. And I think I was saying to you before we started recording, it was like, as soon as they were born, like something switched in me and I was like, oh no, this is way more intense than I ever thought it was. And there's so much more to it. And there's so, it's hard to implement some of the things that I was saying to parents working as a family therapist, like, can you like do this, do that? And like, as a parent, I'm like, oh, heck no, I can't do that. It's not going to happen. And so that's the other piece of like the things that I try and bring to the families that I work with now and my work is like, what's going to be practical? What like, it's not reasonable. Like some things are just not reasonable. Like you don't have 30 minutes to check in with a child every day. You just don't, it's not going to happen. I know what an after-school schedule looks like. It's not feasible. So what can we do?
Yeah. It's like, we got to look at what reality is and then what the fantasy is. And I always say like, we can aim for the fantasy. Like we can aim for the ideal, but dude, we're not going to get 30 minutes of one-on-one time with each kid. That's just not happening.
It sounds lovely. Wouldn't it be great? But like, no, I have to cook dinner and somebody needs glasses and
somebody has soccer practice. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
The other thing I think that is important for us to say, because we were saying this before we started recording, is the role that anger and rage plays for parents and how that was one of those things that we didn't know. Oh, wow. I had no idea I had rage issues before I had children. And then you have kids. And it's like, I used to think I was so patient and so zen, and I was, and then I had my own kids and there's just this crazy like beast that lives within you that you're like, where did that come from? Yeah. And so that, I mean, it's interesting because the heart of your work is about coping skills. And so much of coping skills, I think, is modeled by us as the parent and stuff, obviously, but what has that kind of journey been like for you of seeing, okay, so yeah, there was stuff that would have worked pre-kids with me regulating myself and me coping. What have you sort of found is that experience, I guess, of coping within yourself and as a human, you know?
You know, it's so interesting because I feel like I've evolved a few different times throughout my life in terms of coping. You know, like I was in therapy as a high schooler and I loved it. That's actually why I decided to become a therapist. I loved my therapist and I felt like we talked about so much stuff. I got to understand that what I can versus can't control very early on in my life. And so I feel like that's been very helpful just in general in life. And I felt like I was able to figure out some good coping skills to use that I used throughout like my college years and like graduate school, early getting married. And then I had kids and I was like, oh gosh, like I had kids and I was working full time. So like, there's this push pull of like a working mom and like, I'm not doing either one really well, like that frustrating feeling of that. And then being like the extreme, like instant rage that can come up that I never had experienced before. I thought I was a very patient person. People would compliment me on my patience and my like calm manner. And then I remember one day I was like, I am smoke. It's like my body's a volcano, you know, like I've done that with kids. I was like, I'm a volcano right now. I'm like spewing everywhere. Yeah. And to be able to do some self-reflection, like afterwards, because, you know, in the moment I'm like, oh, I got to figure something out to like make it through. I think I put on a TV show and I was like, I got to go, like, I got to do something. So I figured out like the things that worked for me when I was a teenager were not actually going to be able to work anymore. Like I can't have like 2 hours to myself and like give myself a facial and do my nails on Friday night. It's not going to happen. So you know what I mean? Like, it's just not happening with like toddlers and preschoolers and elementary school kids around. Yeah. So then you do something different. You learn different strategies. You learn different things. And I will have to say, I felt like I went through that metamorphosis again in COVID, especially like maybe 3 months in. I was like, this is not working, y'all. I'm looking around and I'm like, yep, this isn't, all my things that were working before are not working now. So I need to reorganize, re-look at things and figure out what I can do now. And so it's happened a few times in my life where I've really needed to like really examine and figure out what are my strategies that are going to work and be okay with that. And I know your strategies change throughout life. I say that all the time. I say that to parents. I say it to educators and I said it to myself. It is okay. Let's figure this out. Let's find something that's going to work for you.
I think that's a really valuable point to make because I think a lot of times parents and clients will say to me, but this is how I've always navigated my anxiety before. This is how I've always handled stress before. And I'm like, yeah, but dude, you have 3 kids now. Or Yeah, but you're working full time now. You're not working part time, or you're not studying anymore. Whatever, stuff has changed. And I think what we tend to do is get down on ourselves or beat ourselves up, or like compassion goes out the window because something must be wrong with me or whatever. And I think that's a really valuable thing to point out, that no, there's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken. Like, you just got to evolve and you got to adapt and tweak and shift. Do you have a go-to one or three or five that you kind of go, it seems to be for me, or maybe for families you work with, that blah is just this gold mine that just always seems to deliver and always is a pretty reliable one? Or do you go, nah, it's not that, it's not a one size fits all kind of thing?
It's, for me, I don't feel like it's one size fits all for like the families I work with. And even within my own family, like the four of us that live in this house all cope in different ways. And we respect that. Like, and sometimes it's hard, but we try to respect each other's ways of coping. And I think it's very individual. So for me, I know one thing that I discovered actually in COVID was walking was so healing. Just getting outside of my house, even just walking around the block, walking outside in nature is healing for me. It's actually healing for my husband too, but he needs to move. He's a mover. So he shuffles cards. He chews gum, which kind of drives me crazy, but I understand. Like he paces. He is constant. He's like up and down. He does push-ups in like jumping jacks or stuff during the day in between meetings, because that's how his body needs to move in order to focus. My daughter is all about art. She loves drawing. She loves creating. She loves spending time with her friends and chatting about nonsense, as you do when you are 13, you know?
Yep. Yep.
And my son really loves podcasts. He loves mystery books, and he's also a mover and a shaker. So he loves soccer, and he loves being able to get up and play with our new dog. But then he also is like a musician. So he loves playing in the jazz band. He loves playing his clarinet, playing his trumpet. So those are his ways of coping.
That's so cool. Cause I think what a lot of times people will say to me, parents will say to me like, oh, do you have a list of coping skills? And I'm like, yeah, I can give you like, and you can Google it. Like there's heaps of, you have them, I know, on your website and your resources section. But what I think people think it coping skills are is like, it's a certified list, you know, like there's a right list and a wrong list. And this is what, okay, so like meditation and yoga, and that's what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, or journaling, but that doesn't work for everyone. So I think the beauty of what you just shared is like, just think about what calms you down. Just think about what you like to do, what your body feels drawn to do. So maybe could you go through, because I know I watched your webinar that you did with Big Life Journal. And that was so cool how you broke down the areas, how there's like movers and shakers, and you broke it kind of all down in the kind of groups that you can sort of categorize. So could you maybe explain coping skills in how you sort of segment them? And then is there like a basic intro, like of what are coping skills, right? Because I know it has to do with regulation, but how do you, when you're explaining it to parents that are totally new to this world, how do you kind of explain? So this is what a coping skill is. This is what it isn't. And then how you categorize it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the way that I explain coping skills is very simple. I just say it's a way that you can deal with big emotions, with challenging situations. And you can sort of think about it as in terms of like healthy versus unhealthy. So like, is it a healthy coping skill versus an unhealthy coping skill? And the way that I define unhealthy is, does it hurt yourself? Does it hurt somebody else? Or does it hurt property? There's a lot of wiggle room in that. So a lot of things can work for you. A lot of strategies can really develop for you, and you can find some different things that work for you within that. You know what I mean? It's just, there's so many, it's just, how are you dealing with the situation that's in front of you? You're having a challenging experience right now, or you're having a big feeling. How do you deal with it in a safe and healthy way? So the way that I sort of like to do it, because as a therapist, when you first come out of grad school, you know this, like they give you this whole like list, you know, like what the parents are looking for. Like, here's this list of coping skills, like 101 ways to deal with stress. It's really confusing and overwhelming. And so it actually came very organically. I was working with some kids and we were talking about like this list is too long. And we started dividing it up right there. And so over time, I've sort of developed these like five coping styles, and they're not hard and fast categories, but it gives you a place to begin, a place to start that feels a little less overwhelming than the whole list. So I think about relaxation, and that's where I think that a lot of people, they are talking about mindfulness, they're talking about progressive muscle relaxation, deep breathing falls into that. So that's really that relaxation coping skill. And then I talk about distraction, and this is about play and fun activities, and it's not avoiding or suppressing or denying any of the emotions or situations that are going on, but sometimes your brain needs a break. Or sometimes you're perseverating and you need to get a break from it because you are like kids, you know, they're in the middle of school. How are they going to get a break to be able to focus on what they need to do? So give them like a quick distraction that they can do. And then I think about movement because I have a couple of movers and shakers in my house, but I've also seen this with kids that maybe have ADHD. They need to move. And that feels good to their bodies. I started working with a new kid. He's a mover. He's like, the way that I feel better when I'm feeling anxious is I get up, I go outside, I move, I jump, I spin, I run. It feels good for him. And that's something I think that we don't always acknowledge that movement piece can be helpful for kids. It doesn't necessarily always have to fall into this like, you have to sit down and you have to do mindfulness. Like some kids really need to move, and you can move and be mindful at the same time. And then there are the kids that really like the sensory kids, the kids that maybe are experiencing sensory processing, some sensory issues. My best friend's an OT, so we talk about this a fair amount. Really involving your senses, thinking about not only like the five that you think about, but where your body is in space, using your sense of balance. Do we need to do some heavy work? Do we need to do some squeezes to help you feel better? So that's the sensory piece. And sometimes I put them together because it can be a little bit tricky. And sometimes I separate them out. And then processing. And that's the thing that I think we think most of as therapists, we're like, let's talk about your feelings. Let's go and explore like where you feel things in your body. Let's make a plan for next time. Let's do journaling. Let's like do all the talking about what's going on. Right.
Yeah.
But all of those things are things we can do to help ourselves cope with challenging situations and challenging feelings.
Yes. So I have relaxation, movers and shakers, sensory, and processing. Is that right?
And distraction.
And distraction. Okay. Now that I think is a fascinating one, because I think most people would give themselves a hard time about distraction, that they would say, this is wild. This is crazy. This is scandalous. You know, this coping skills specialist lady just said that distraction's okay. I remember feeling that too at the beginning of COVID with lockdown and stuff, that if I wanted to watch Netflix if I wanted to watch Tiger King for a few hours at the beginning of COVID, as we all did, that was like bad or not okay. And then I sort of was like getting curious about it to myself. And I was like, I know what I'm doing. I know, like, I'm conscious, I'm awake. I'm not just like mindlessly numbing and just like zoning out like a zombie. I'm very clear of what I'm doing. I need to zone out. I need to escape. I need to have some other world that is not homeschool and laundry and work and life. I can just go to this other world and be there, and that's okay. And I think where we get that wrong is when we're mindlessly gambling or drinking or eating or whatever the thing is, that it's when you're just sort of not paying attention. So can you differentiate for people? And I think you sort of said that of like, does it hurt you? Does it hurt someone else? But could you explain a little bit or give sort of professional permission that it is okay to do distraction? Can you explain that difference for people? Because I think that's one that trips people up a lot.
Yeah, you're right. It does trip people up. And I think one of the things that I always say is play is a natural stress reliever. Play naturally relieves stress. And it's something that I think we, as adults, we don't give ourselves permission to play. And for our kids, we don't always have an opportunity with our busy schedules. Because like I said, I am a parent. I've been there. Like, we have things that we have to do. But to give them permission to have some free time for open-ended play where they are kind of bored and they need to figure it out. But there's something so refreshing about play. Like it actually, it really does help kids reset and reframe. One of the things that I said as kids were going back into school is I said, what you should do is actually have time to play. Like when they get home from school, it's going to be a long day. It's going to be intense. It's going to be a lot. So just give them a snack and let them play. Like just let them do that to let their bodies reset and give their brains a break. They've been working so hard all day long. It's hard to sit in a classroom, even with mask breaks. It's very hard. And so to be able to give themselves a break, and then the play can be so, it's like recreation. It's so fun. It's so relaxing, and it's so can create, you can be more creative when in play. You're curious. You can think outside the box. There's so many benefits of play that I think we sort of overlook it. There's a great book by Stuart Brown and Christopher Vaughn called Play. And it talks about the play in the animal kingdom, play for kids and play for adults, and how play in adults helps with their creativity and work production, actually, because you allow your brain to be creative and open and thinking differently. And there's something so much, I think we should all be allowed to play. I actually went to a conference with Stuart Brown. We actually played, like they had like crayons, and it was all adults. They had like crayons and coloring paper on the desks. And then they had like giant Jenga outside and giant Connect Four. I was like, this is the kind of conference I should always go to.
Totally. It's
like, I'm getting CE credits for this. Yeah. Right now. It was awesome. But that's
so great.
It was so much fun. It was so much fun. And I remember that, like you go to a lot of conferences. That is a conference that sticks with me because we had so much fun, but we learned a lot about the power of play. And the thing is, there are times when you need to just escape because, I mean, especially at the beginning of COVID, it was challenging. It was hard. And that's why I think why Tiger King took off, because I watched it too. And it was, and you're like, oh my gosh, is this really like somebody else is, yeah. This is somebody else's life right now. And yeah. This is what an intense, unbelievable story. I also did just watch Tiger King too. Not gonna lie, my husband and I binged that. So,
totally. But
fun thing about it was that my husband and I watched it together. So we connected, and we like still like like we always are like, I'm never gonna financially recover from this.
Like, totally. Oh yeah.
But you have that connection, and I also like I think about, you know, you mentioned like, if you're like drinking mindlessly or eating mindlessly, I always say like you definitely like break out of the food and alcohol habit as adults. But here's the thing, like I still love Nutella. And so what I do is I like make Nutella croissants, or I make and I enjoy it. And it becomes a moment for me where I'm like, I took the time to make croissant. Do you know how long croissants take? It's like days.
I had no idea. No, I didn't know. Days. Okay.
Yeah. Like there's this whole like fold and you like put it in the fridge and let it sit. And then you fold it again and you put it in the fridge and let it sit. Oh yeah. It's a thing. But so like if I'm making Nutella croissants and I have made them from scratch, I'm going to enjoy it. And I know how much work went into it. And I've lived in California. I lived in wine country. What tasting wine is one of my favorite things because you can do it so mindfully. You have to smell and you take a little sip and you pay attention to the flavors that you taste. And it's very mindful. Like you can do it in a very mindful way. I love that. So I try to, even when it comes to those sort of things, I try to be careful about how I'm interacting with it. But for me, I want to show my kids, I can do things other than like have a glass of wine at the end of the night. I play video games. I play board games. I crochet, I garden, I knit, I do things to help me play and reset.
And I think that's the key, isn't it? There's something to play and reset. And that is unique to everyone, I guess, as unique as like your thumbprint, you know, it's not a one size fits all, a gender thing, an age thing, a cultural thing. Like there's probably maybe consistencies, but it doesn't really matter is kind of what you're saying. So how does someone start this sort of process? If they're totally new to this sort of thing and they go, okay, so this sounds good. I like this idea of coping skills. I like the idea of not kind of losing it with my kids more. That's cool. I like modeling that for them. Or I like, you know, teaching my kids, this is how you can sort of cope more. What would you say is like the, how do you start? Like, what are the questions that you like, what are the questions that one asks themselves besides like, this is what I enjoy to do. Like how can you kind of dig a bit deeper to get your own kind of list going?
Oh, absolutely. So what I like to do for adults is I actually like them to think about like, what did you like to do as a child? Yeah. Isn't that fun to think about? That brings up so many things. Like I love to roller skate. I love roller skating and wow. We've been roller skating as a family. It's really awesome. Fun.
Yeah.
I think about what brings you joy, what makes you laugh, what recharges you, what re-energizes you. And I also like people to think about what do you like to do by yourself versus with other people? And what do you like to do outside versus inside? Because like here, like sometimes there's snowstorms and you can't leave your house. So like, what's your plan?
When you're locked inside.
What's your plan? When you may not leave. And then also starting to understand more about your own personality as an adult. Like I know that I'm actually an introvert, but not people don't believe me when I say that, but I am. I get more energy from being by myself. Like that's how I recharge. Mm-hmm. My daughter is not. She's like, I need to be around people. And that's just how it is. Like we know that about ourselves and we accommodate that. We make plans for that. So to really think about, you know, what makes you feel laugh? You know, like what are those silly things that you like to do? And, you know, sometimes it is Instagram reels. Like that's my jam right now. I'm not going to lie to you.
Totally.
I like find myself like, ooh, I think I could do that dance. I've watched it enough. So I'm like, I can try it. Let me try it.
It's also a good way to bond with your kids. I think like a lot of parents will hate on TikTok and stuff like that. That's a whole nother podcast episode about TikTok and social media. But I think if your kids are into it, it's such a great way to help them cope and be silly and bond together is doing the silly dances or, you know, doing that stuff together. Yeah. Just you don't necessarily have to post it, but
And for us, my son and I did get into TikTok for a little bit, but we found like we were like losing time on TikTok. So we stopped doing that. But what we did was then we started watching YouTube and he has like favorite YouTubers that he likes to watch. So we would watch it together. Like he really got into Dude Perfect. And so we started watching Dude Perfect together, which is like, but it's fun because like we'll laugh about it. We'll talk about it. It can be really a bonding experience when you do something like that with your kids.
I think that's good for you to say too, because I think, you know, how a lot of times we have to give parents permission that things are okay to do, you know, like that, even that, like saying when they come home from school, give them a break. They can zone out. They don't have to do their homework straight away. Like let them have some downtime. I think hearing that from a professional is so helpful to take the pressure off, I think, of parents to go, oh, okay. So they don't have to just jump into their science homework as soon as they sit down. Like they can have something to eat and zone out watching TV or playing on something. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to give parents permission to do is play video games with your kid. Like you can definitely do it. And I'm a child of the 80s. So like I played video games as a kid. Dude. So
yeah. Super Mario and Zelda all day, every day. Yeah.
And you know what? They're still around and my kids play them now. Yeah. So my daughter plays Breath of the Wild and we all play Mario Kart and Mario Party. We got really into Animal Crossing and then Stardew Valley, which is like, when I tell people I play these games, they're like, so what do you do? I'm like, well, you go fishing and you pick fruit, you garden. So they're like, so you do this in a game? And I'm like, yeah, it's really fun.
It's so true though. It's so like, it doesn't have to be, I think sometimes parents put pressure, not parents, all of us. I think we put pressure on ourselves that being a good parent means we're playing like Monopoly together. No one loses it when they're playing. No one has a tantrum. Everyone's happy the whole time. When they lose all their money, nobody cries. And that's what quote unquote bonding time and family time is all about. And it's like, girl, that is just not real life. And that is not like, there's a great example, coping skills for board game. How do you handle that? How do you start? Cause you would know that's a common question. How would you say, this is how we tackle coping skills for board game meltdowns. How do you handle that?
So I wouldn't start with Monopoly because that's a really frustrating long game. Like, let's be honest. Like, Monopoly is a game that I, like, my kids will ask me to play. And I was like, is it summertime? No, then we are not playing. Because you need time. And we do, like, I think every summer for a while now, since they've been big enough, we do have like a Monopoly, like couple of days. Plus, like, we play old school rules. So like the game can last for a while. So what I would say to parents is if they, when they're younger, start with like easier board games, things like preschool age, like you can do Zingo, which is bingo with pictures, and like starting off with like some very easy board games and recognize that it won't go well. Like recognize that there is somebody's going to have a meltdown, a board will go over. But what you can do is you can talk about what your expectations are beforehand and say, like, you know, when we play games, you might get frustrated. What are some strategies that you could use when you get frustrated in the game? And we talk about it. And then it doesn't go well. Fine. And so then we
standard. Yep.
Like, please understand that board games have been knocked over in my house too. Like they like have definitely been flipped. Like people have rage quit. So it happened. So then to talk about afterwards, like, gosh, that didn't go well. I wonder what happened. I wonder what we can do again. So let's try it again and to revisit. And if it's the competitive piece, if that piece is really hard, like you're trying to beat each other, you can start with cooperative games instead. So there's the whole line of cooperative games from Peaceable Kingdom, and they have games for preschool up until like middle school, high school. So there are games that from Peaceable Kingdom that my son and I play, but then there's also like cute games, like you can put all the baby owls into the nest called Hoot Owl Hoot. So there's lots of different ways you can work on, and you're working together to beat the game as opposed to beating each other. That feels, it feels more cooperative, it feels more collaborative, and it's easier than to like work on turn taking and the basic game skills. And then being able to like tackle frustration later. Cause I feel like sometimes you have to separate it out. Like, let's just work on taking turns and waiting and like moving the piece the way you need to move it. And then now let's work on like, what is winning and losing graciously look like?
Yeah, that's a big piece. That's a big piece. Yeah.
Goodness. Like, do you need to like, do you need to like throw your money up in the air in Monopoly? No, we don't need to do that.
No, we don't. No. But it is so, it's so funny though, how we forget, I think, that losing is a skill, like learning how to lose, learning how to say, hey, good game, you know, learning how to do that. I think we forget as parents that that's something you have to learn, and you usually learn it the hard way, and you don't learn it through like, I don't know, reading a book or something. Like you learn on the court, you learn at the coffee table, playing the board game, that that's kind of the normal way that you learn what it's like to lose or to mess up, or like you played the wrong card, or, you know, you missed the shot or whatever.
Yeah. And it's okay. And mistakes are okay. Mistakes are part of learning. And that's something that I try to really work on with my own and with my clients. Like, it's okay. If you make a mistake, let's figure it out. Let's try and figure something else out for differently for the next time. It didn't feel good. I know. So let's figure it out.
Do you have a coping skill that you find works a lot with that kind of kid, the perfectionist kid who I'm writing something and then I got a letter wrong and I scribble it out and want to crumple the whole paper? Do you have something that you find works well for that kind of issue, or the, like it didn't go well, it didn't go how I wanted it to, besides breathing, which is kind of the common, or like the blowing the candle out breath? What is something else that you find helps those kids?
So there are two things that I like to do with those types of kids. I like to talk with them about their self-talk. If they're big enough, I want to talk with them about like, what's the playlist that goes on in your head when you make a mistake, and how can we change that playlist to something a little bit different? Like, I'll never get it right, or I don't have it right yet, or mistakes are part of learning, and having some mantras, some sort of self-talk that is affirmative of like, it's okay to make a mistake. So I like to talk with them about like, let's examine this. Let's think about this from a different perspective. Like, everybody makes mistakes. And I will tell, like, I try to model that and say like, oh, I made a mistake today, especially for those kids who are the perfectionists. Like, I will come in and I will be like, guess what I did? That went really wrong. So they know, like, it's okay. Like, adults make mistakes. Kids make mistakes. We all make mistakes. So I like taught. So I guess that's like a separate one, but like really modeling, like.
Yes, totally agree.
That. But then the other thing I like to do is there's a couple of books that I think are really great when kids are making mistakes and having a hard time with it. Mistakes That Worked is a great book. So it talks about all the inventions that we use on a daily basis that would not have been invented if a mistake hadn't happened. And so you
love it.
Isn't that cool?
That's so great. That's so great.
You're like, oh my gosh, like we wouldn't have this thing if this other thing hadn't happened and they made a mistake and they mixed the wrong stuff. And then suddenly we wouldn't have it. It's really cool for them to realize like there are some really cool things that like wouldn't be here if we didn't have that. And then for the younger kids, I like the book Beautiful Oops. And so isn't it gorgeous? Like you, it's sweet. Like this rip. And then you turn the page and they've turned it into something beautiful. So ways that you can just really reframe thinking about like, it was a mistake. Okay. But what can you do now? And let's think about it. And a mistake isn't bad. A mistake is just part of life.
Yeah. I think you're right. Modeling is huge. Even this morning, my daughter, a friend lent her a toy yesterday, a little stuffed animal, and she's going to bring it back today. Oh girl, we had tears. She couldn't find it. She couldn't find it. And initially I was like, so frustrated because it was making us late. And then she said, I think she could sense that I was irritated and I was irritated with her, which I was kind of irritated with her if I'm honest, but she said, didn't you ever lose a toy when you were a kid? And I was like, girl, you just hit me right in the
I have.
You're right. And it brought me back to like, Heidi, have some compassion. Like, yes, you're annoyed that this is making you late. And this is what I'm like, always annoyed when they want to borrow toys from their friends, as I'm like worried the dog's going to chew it or they're going to lose it or they're going to spill ketchup on it or something. And so I was like trying to put all of that to the side. And then when she said that, I was like, yeah, you're totally right. I have lost lots of toys. I lost my AirPods and those are very expensive. And I lost those a few weeks ago. Like, yes. And I just said, you're right, bud. You're totally right. I've lost a lot of things, especially when I was a kid and my brain was still working on being built. It's hard to remember stuff when you're a kid. You're totally right. And sort of repaired kind of my sassy attitude that I was having with her. But yeah, I think modeling is probably, I would say, my go-to with coping skill management. I think, yeah, you can teach it. We have our lists and they have same, like you were saying, like they have their mantras, they have their, you know, put their hand on their heart and take a deep breath. They have those, the blowing out the candles, they have those strategies. But I think when I show them, oh, I missed my turn, you know, we're driving and oh, I missed my turn. Oh, well, I'll just go around the block, you know, and kind of showing that, yeah, beautiful oops, that it's okay to make mistakes, you know. I think, what would you say like to parents though, who feel maybe a bit, but Janine, I've sucked at that. I've really not modeled it well. I'm a perfectionist myself. I berate myself and beat myself up when I don't handle things graciously or calmly, or I lose it. I yell or have a tantrum. You know, what would you say to those parents that kids are little, older, whatever, that they kind of reflect back and go, I've really not handled that great. I've not modeled it well. What would you say to them?
Okay. So let's try again tomorrow. Like,
totally.
Because when you know better and when you have been able to reflect, you can do better. There's no point in looking back and beating yourself up over things that happened. I would do things very differently with my kids now. And I'll probably say the same thing in 5 more years. Like, totally. Because you learn more as you go on, especially like in the helping profession. Like, I feel like there's been so much more research. There's been so much more interesting stuff that's come out, and there's always going to be something that doesn't go well. That's okay. I think the thing that we can do as parents is to give ourselves grace for making mistakes. No kid wants a perfect parent. That's really hard to live up to. Nobody does. Like, would you want a perfect spouse? No, because that would be annoying. Like, because then I would feel like I can't make a mistake. You're absolutely perfect. I've never, like, I can't like be myself and like wear my robe at 3 p.m. when I want to, you know what I mean?
Like, totally. And those are my friends that like, I think about my friends that they feel perfect to me. Like, they look perfect. Their hair is immaculate. Their house is always immaculate. Their house looks like a museum. like those friends of mine, I feel uncomfortable around. Like, I don't want to let my hair down or talk about pimples or my kid had a meltdown or my kid hit someone or I don't know, yep. those feelings of like, or I got McDonald's, God forbid I didn't cook something organic, you know, like that feeling imperfect. That is what we love about our other friends that are like, let me show you a photo of my messy, you know, living room right now. Let me show you a sink full of dishes. And that is then where we're like, oh, I love you so much. Like, thank you for making me feel less alone and more normal. I think it's that vulnerability that breeds connection and keeps us out of shame. But I think it is just, it's hard. I think it is just, it's hard because us as the parents and adults, like we're still learning our coping skills, yep. right? Like, and you and I are professionals, man. And like, we know this stuff and we're still learning that. What would you say is the reason why? Like, I mean, for me, I would say it's about like childhood stuff and what was modeled for me. What would you say is like the, why are we still learning this? You and I, even though we're 20 years into our career and we teach this stuff, we eat this stuff for breakfast, man. And like, we're still working on our own coping skills. What would you say is the why? Why is that?
Well, I think first, because we're humans, because we're all working on stuff. We're like, I always think we're all works in progress. Like I'm not fully baked. I don't want to be yet. Like I feel like I have a lot more learning to do, mm-hmm. but like the other thing is like, there is a lot of stuff that will come up for you. Like as you become a parent, as you go through different phases of your life, things that you thought you had resolved or things that you didn't realize were an issue from like being a kid have come up. And my sister and I now, like she's 40, I'm 43. And we've been talking more and more about like how we were raised and how like the expression of emotion and what was allowed and what was not. And it's been really interesting to have these conversations with her. We couldn't have had those conversations even 10 years ago. You get better and you get older and you learn more and you integrate that into your world. And the thing that I like about being a therapist and being a mom is being able to be like, okay, that didn't go well. I can restart again. Because that's what I would say to a client. I say it to totally. Myself. That didn't go well. That's okay. I am human. I make mistakes. I'm going to be okay. We're going to do it better next time. And I like the mantra of like, I'm the thermostat in my house. I want to set the tone. I don't want to be the thermometer going up and down. When I first had that like big volcano moment as a parent of a young kid, I was like, I need to be a thermostat. This is not working for me.
Yes. Yes.
And how do I get the thermostat analogy.
I love that analogy. That's so good.
Oh, it's not mine.
That is good.
I got it from, oh my gosh, I was listening to another podcast like several years ago and I always forget this woman's name. She's an amazing play therapist, but she's like, you want to be the thermostat, not the thermometer. And I was like, that's amazing. I'm totally doing that.
So true. We set the tone, don't we? We set the pace. We set the volume for what it's like. Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think that's where I start when I talk to parents about my kid has no coping skills or, you know, they're not resilient. Where I start is saying to the parent, well, let's back it up. What was modeled for you in your home? What did coping skills look like in your home? And it's usually something like we were sent to our room. That was the coping, was like, go to your room until you calm down, yelling, shaming. And then, you know, maybe like I watched the adults drink, watch TV, or just go, oh, never mind. We'll just won't worry about it. And just sort of sweep it under the rug is what I hear a lot of clients would say is what was modeled for them with coping. And I think even just like self-compassion, wild as a coping skill, like that I can say to myself, it's okay. And I'm working on it. Like that is something that is a real simple coping skill to teach our kids, but that like none of us, like not, I mean, rarely is someone modeled that in their own childhood. You know, that's only something you would get now that you've like listened to a podcast or read about it. But what would you say is like where you start with coping skills with a parent who says, I just feel like my kid has no coping skills. They're just not resilient at all. What do you sort of say to that? What's your usual spiel?
So I would say, I'm sure that they do actually have some, but we haven't necessarily recognized them as coping skills yet. And I actually will bring out the coping skills checklist because on there are things like play video games or read or color. And if you find things that you enjoy, to be able to make that connection between having something that you enjoy and doing that when you feel upset, doing that when you feel mad, doing that when you feel overwhelmed, doing that when it's a hard situation, you're not sure where to go yet, but you're trying to figure it out. To be able to make that connection for families and for kids to know you actually have some, that it's so powerful to watch it happen in front of you, to be like, oh, I can read? That is a coping skill? I'm like, uh-huh. The thing that you love to do, you can use that. Absolutely. Let's figure out when it would be a good time for you to read. Let's figure out when it would be a good time for you to color, when it would be a good time for you to take a walk. What are those strategies? So it's actually very empowering for families, because then they can be like, oh, she does. They do have coping skills. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of making the connection.
Yes. Yes. And I think it reminds me of how, like, you know, if you had a personal trainer and you said to him, I want to run a marathon next year, they would go, okay, well, we have to do this training. You know, we do sprints, we do longer intervals, we do incline, we do all these different training sort of strategies, and we got to work on your back and your hips. And so we're going to do some gym days on this day and stretching, right? There's a whole plan. And I think what we forget is that social emotional management is like skills. They're things to learn, but you also have to write them like a plan. Like, yeah, it's the same way with like a portfolio with stocks. Like, there's a plan. You don't just like poof show up and then you've earned $1 million over 30 years. Like, it doesn't work like that. You have a plan, and coping skills and regulation is a plan. So does that mean then, would you say, like, if someone came and worked with you, would you be doing, like, over the course of a bunch of sessions, would you be going like, okay, so, you know, Bobby, what you are, so if it's relaxation, movers and shakers, sensory processing and distraction, you would say, okay, so Bobby, it sounds like when you start the morning and you're finding it hard to just cope with, oh, it's a school day and you don't really like school, in the morning, you do best with doing relaxation, or you do better with doing moving and shaking. So you go jump on the trampoline. And then when you come home from school, it sounds like your brain really likes to distract. So then at the end of the day, your coping skill is distraction. And then when you go to the doctor and you have to get a shot and you don't want to get a shot, what works best for you is whatever. Is that how you sort of manage it? If you were doing like a longer plan with a family or a kid, is we figure out where we do what? Is that kind of how you would encourage parents to sort of start to like put a plan together?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I would say is like, so if let's find the sticky parts, let's find the sticky, the parts that are like really challenging. Is it before school? Is it after school? Is it going to the doctor? Like, where are those like really challenging times? And let's make a plan. And if after we've gone through the checklist and we've figured out like, oh, well, at this point, like I can do deep breathing when I go and get my allergy shots or whatever. Like I figure that out. If there isn't anything there, then I always like to sort of try and add to the coping skills toolbox for the kid. So then we will practice a new one. Like, oh, so you don't have any deep breathing strategies. Okay, cool. So let's try doing deep breathing with a GIF, or let's try doing five finger breathing, or let's try doing breathing with a shape. So how does that feel for you? Did that work for you? Did you like it? Should we add it to your toolbox? And should we add it to the thing that you do when you're going to, like, maybe say the doctor, because it's very anxiety provoking.
Right. Yes. So it is more like we have to be really thoughtful and systematized, kind of. We have to come up with a plan. You can't just show up, kind of thing. You got to be methodical with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's and knowing like, what are those like parts that are challenging? And it can change for kids. That changes. Like for my kid, my son, dentist was horrifying at the beginning when he was little, and now it's better. Shots were really bad. Now it's better. Now it's other things. You know what I mean? So it changes over time. So you also have to like sort of go where they are and go where they need. And so you can help them. Okay. So that part isn't sticky anymore. We don't need a hard, you're not having a hard time when you go to the dentist anymore. Phenomenal. But you're having a hard time when you're like working on a school presentation, like a class presentation. So let's figure out what to do that.
And I think it's hard too when if your kid has stuff that's harder for them, that's not hard for you. Like, yeah, if I don't have an issue, say with, I don't know, public speaking, right? I got no problem with that. But if my daughter had a class presentation and she was really nervous about, my initial thought might be, why are you nervous about that? Getting to stand up in front of people and talking. Oh yeah, she's different than me, you know, or like my daughter's fearless with swimming. I don't like the water. I'm not a big swimmer. So it's like, you've got to just sort of look at stuff as like what I find easy. They may not find easy, what they find hard. I may not find hard, but we can't like minimize and invalidate that just because it's easy for me, you know?
Right. It's that validation piece. I think that is so helpful for kids to feel like, I hear you. I see you. I recognize that this is hard for you. Like for me, like going and speaking to the school principal is not a challenge, but like for a fourth grader, that can be terrifying. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not in trouble, it's terrifying. So to validate their emotions, to validate how they are feeling about things is huge for kids.
Yeah, totally. Oh man, I could talk to you for hours. This is a wealth of information, but if people want to learn more, I know that your website has an amazing amount of free resources, which is so generous of you. Where else can people find you, work with you, your Instagram handle, like your website, all the stuff. So if people want to learn more, they can find you. Where should they go? Yeah.
Absolutely. So if they want, I have a bunch of free resources over at copingskillsforkids.com. And I am on Instagram at copingskillsforkids. So that's really fun. I've been like working through Instagram. I'm also on Facebook, Coping Skills for Kids as well. And I think those are the like main ones that I usually do. I do some stuff on Pinterest under Encourage Play, but I just really love Pinterest. So I pin so many things just for fun cool. activities to find. And yeah, if they want some free resources and, oh, the other thing is the podcast. So if you want to listen to the podcast, that's actually at JeaneHalloran.com. Okay. So that's where the podcast is.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time and for sharing a bit of your personal experience and like what works for you and your kids. I always think that's helpful when clinicians can sort of talk more real about like what is happening in their real life rather than just like professionally. So I thank you and appreciate you for doing that. And thanks for just sharing all of your 2 decades of experience with us and sharing some insights. I think it's been really valuable. So thank you for your time.
Well, and thank you for inviting me. This was so much fun.
It was. All right, everyone, that wraps up today's episode. We will catch you next time on an episode of Tell the Others.
If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you want my help in improving things with the kiddos in your life, or if you're simply a human being feeling kind of stuck and maybe kind of overwhelmed, my online programs have lots of resources, transformative content, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a supportive community. If you want to learn more, just go to HeidiRogers.com. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.